I want to start this episode with a bit of a phone conversation that I had with my vet friend, Don, the other day. Yeah, I don't know if I told you, but I'm going to start doing TPLOs.
Oh, that's great. When did you specialize?
No, I'm not a specialist. I'm just a very enthusiastic GP. But I really feel that it would benefit my patients.
Sure, I get that. So which course did you do? I know there are a couple of good ones with excellent wet labs.
Dude, those are so expensive. There's no ways I can afford that. But I'm naturally just quite a good surgeon, you know?
Boom. Wow, pretty brave doing TPLOs just from an online course. You must have an amazing textbook. Or is there someone in the practice who's been mentoring you?
Nah, but I've seen heaps of post-op x-rays of TPLOs and I've watched the YouTube video. And I really think that with my intelligence and my natural talent and maybe a bit of trial and error, that we can make it work. I think we'll get there.
Okay. Anyway, I need to go. Good to chat. Is this the vet board? Yes. I'd like to lodge a concern.
That's a ridiculous conversation, right? For a start, I don't actually know anyone who's as eloquent as my friend Don. So if that conversation is so ridiculous, then why is it that this is kind of how many of us run our vet businesses? Now, let me be very clear. I've met amazing practice owners and team leaders who run excellent businesses, and some of them are naturally good leaders and good business people. But for the vast majority of people who run the best vet practices, they sucked at it when they started. But the one thing that they have in common is that they get outside help. A business coach or a course, or maybe they're just ferocious readers, but they do not just wing it. There are people's careers and wellness at stake. And that's not something to take lightly. In fact, here's my advice for young vets and job seekers. If you're considering working at a practice, ask the boss, what's the most recent leadership course that you guys did? Do you have a business coach? Which books most influenced your leadership style? You'll learn a lot about your future employer based on the answers they give. And for the business owners, and I can say this because I was a business owner without a coach, why would you want to do it alone when there are so many good resources out there? This point was brought home to me again after this conversation with veterinary business coach, author, and let's call him fellow seeker and teacher of ways to be happier in this career of ours, Dr. Sam Bowden. Sam shares such practical advice that I have to kind of facepalm myself for not having someone like this in my life when I ran my own practice. In this episode, we talk about what's different in the vet profession in 2023 compared to when we last had Sam on the podcast just over a year ago, including what Sam calls the profitless boom. Sam shares some data with us on what our clients, your clients, value, and some practical ways that we could deliver that in a way that's affordable, but also sustainable both financially and emotionally for the entire team. We dig into how the veterinary job market is different now compared to a year ago, and how it might change again over the next year or two as we discuss the big question, have we become entitled? Which I think is an important conversation to hear for our business owners, but also for our young vets and future vets. In fact, I lined up this interview with practice owners in mind, but Sam and I kicked off the first half of this conversation with some really granular and practical insights for new and recent grad vets, and for those who will employ them. So pass it along to anyone who you think needs to hear this, whether it's your classmate or maybe it's your boss. If you didn't meet Sam when we last had him on, that's in episode 75 back in August 2022, I'll do a quick intro. Dr. Sam Bowden spent 15 years as a practicing vet, owning and growing two practices during that time. He's devoted the last 12 years of his career helping practice owners increase their happiness, work-life balance, and profitability. He is the founder of United Vets Group, the ultimate veterinary practice, Complete Vet Systems, More Vet Clients websites, the Accelerate Mastermind Group, Vet Business Manager Program, the Dental Academy, and also the author of The Abundant Practice. Sam's teaching focuses heavily on mindset combined with practical strategies to allow practice owners and teams to reach their full potential, including around the things that we mentioned earlier, like happiness, work-life balance, and profitability. And it's exactly the kind of support that I talked about earlier, the kind of support that so many of us think that we don't need. Now, I'm using Sam's Accelerate Mastermind Group as an example of good support here because, well, you're about to listen to Sam, and I know him, and I've heard some great feedback from his clients since having him on the podcast a year ago. Plus, he gives me some money if you do sign up with him and you tell him that you heard about his work from me, which is nice. And also, that's the ad section done for this episode. We do have an affiliate arrangement with Sam. So if you want to have a conversation with him to find out how he can help you with all the stuff we talk about in this episode, then please use the link in the show description to book a chat with him so that he knows that I sent you. In fact, there's a great opportunity coming up soon, very soon in fact, for you to kind of try before you buy to see if the Accelerate Mastermind would be a good fit for you and your team. On the first weekend of February, they are hosting their annual gala AMG members event, which is historically strictly for members of the current mastermind. But this year, Sam is opening up 5 seats to non-members. The event is all about marketing and finding, serving, and keeping great clients. The kind of clients that make work a pleasure. If you want your bum on one of those 5 seats, we have a link to that in the show description right here where you're listening to this show. But really, I don't mind if it's Sam or Seth Godin or Tony Robbins or Simon Sinek or Brené Brown or any of the other great veterinary-specific management courses out there. Just get some support. Okay, I am done talking. Let's get into it with Dr. Sam Bowden. Welcome back to the Vet Vault for round 2.
Awesome. Great to be here. Thanks, mate.
You know you've been going a while for a podcast when you're having the boomerang guests, the comebacks. But we had such a great response to your last episode and to the stuff that you shared. But I feel like things have changed when we spoke, and we'll come back to that. But it was a different environment. The whole veterinary environment, specifically in Australia, was different to what it is now, which is why I wanted to get your updated views in this conversation for today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the concept, I call it pendulum theory. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing someone say, if you want to know what the future looks like, it's the opposite of what it is now. So, you know, everything's cyclical. And so when things are going great, well, you know, the future, get ready for it not to be so great. And when things aren't so great, get ready for it to be really great. And so really developing that way of thinking that it's normal, there's nothing wrong. You just need to go, well, how are you going to manage it? So, yeah, I think it's a very different environment from really since what start of the year. So really, I think, you know, it started sort of changing around that sort of February, March-ish time is when we really started noticing obvious changes, and it's playing out now.
I like that. That you say the pendulum theory, because I have the same theory. I often think about I must have heard it somewhere, but in everything, culturally, business-wise, everything, it does. Maybe I've just been alive long enough to start noticing it, that it goes this way, and then you go, okay, well, everybody thinks, oh, shit, this is happening. And at the same time, I'm thinking, yeah, for now, that's what's happening now, but just wait. It'll change. Before we dig into all of that and the business stuff and the veterinary landscape, I want your advice. I want your advice on advice that I'm supposed to give. So I am doing a couple of talks to vet students over the next couple of months. And with one of them, the task for the talk that I'm supposed to give is give an inspirational talk to finally a vet student. And I'm a bit stuck because I want to know what is inspirational. What do they need to hear? So my first question to you is, Sam, when you were finally a vet student, if you had to have maybe you had something like this, but if you had to have a talk by some middle-aged veterinarian, what would you have needed to hear, or what would you have found inspiring at that time that would have made you pumped to jump into your career?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's been a little while since I was at uni, so I'm sort of digging back into the grey matter a little. But I can remember always when we'd get like basically just practitioners who'd come in and talk about what it's like in the real world. Not in the academic world of theoretical world of university, what it's like in the real world. And I remember being fascinated by them, like, you know, what sort of money are you going to make and what can you expect, and what sort of hours and what are the clients going to be like and things like that. So I think you're geared up and you're sort of excited about, okay, I'm learning this stuff. I can't wait to actually go and get my hands dirty and, you know, roll up my sleeves. But back then, I know there wasn't that much that actually really prepared me for what's actually going to happen in the real world. Like, here's what it's going to be like for the first 6 months. You're not going to have a clue what you're doing, and that's okay. How do you manage that? How do you talk to clients about that? How do you have the book under the desk? Well, books back then, now it's probably just type online, and know that that's okay. So I think that anything that'll give them support around what's it going to be like in the real world where, hey, a client mightn't say yes to a recommendation of a CT scan. It might be the best thing to do, but they're not going to say yes sometimes, or quite commonly, if they don't have insurance, they just mightn't be able to afford it. I remember I spoke to the university students at Townsville. And so they said, can you come up and spend an hour? And I said, no. I said, it's a day or nothing because there's no point me talking for an hour. I can't get anywhere. And I spent a day with these guys, and they were years 3 to 5. And essentially what we covered was really a mindset that'll support you when you're in practice. And I had people ring me up years later and went, that was the most useful day because it actually prepared me for what I experienced. What amazed me about this, Hubert, this is the thing that blew me away. Afterwards, they'd put a keg on, right? So you're at uni, have a keg, you know, and I'm like, okay, hey, I'm back at uni having a keg. How cool. So I go down there.
Free beer. Hey, yay.
Woot, woot. We'll put it up. And only a few people turned up and I went, where is everyone? They went, oh, they've gone home to study. Now, this is a Saturday night and midterm, not exams, and they've gone home to study. And I said, well, why? Well, they're really worried about their, like, the level of anxiety that they had around, are they going to know their stuff? And I sort of dug in deep and said, what are you really worried about? And they said, we're so anxious that we're going to stuff something up, like an animal, get a case wrong. And then I hear statistics later, and I can't confirm these, it's sort of hearsay, but a huge percentage of students, like at Melbourne University, vet students, coming out on antidepressants before they'd even picked up a scalpel. And when I dug into like, well, what are you worried about? Same thing. I'm worried that I'm going to stuff something up. So what I did with them, they found really useful, was give them reality that, hey, it's not if you stuff something up. It is guaranteed that you're going to stuff up way more frequently, 10 times worse than you can possibly imagine. And that's okay. And I think what they needed the bit is in the real world, things just, as you know, they don't work out someday. You know, stuff just happens. So we spent a bit of time giving them what we call the feedback loop, which is how humans kind of evolve. That if something goes wrong, number one, it's not, and we've talked about this last time, it's not a failure if something goes wrong. It's just feedback. It's how you learn. It's like, oh, I did this and that didn't work. So when you see that I didn't fail because something went west, it was just some learning. And the second piece of it is I'm after progression, not perfection. And what I observe with these students, they're all coming out going, I want to be a perfect vet and get it all right. And that's just not going to happen. And just giving them permission to know it's okay, that that's normal and you are going to do it. So stop worrying about if you're going to do it. You are. Let's give you some ways of actually dealing with it when it does happen, that you don't beat yourself up and you're so nervous about the vet surgeon's board and start getting so anxious that next thing they're just not enjoying their profession. So feedback, not failure, progression, not perfection. And then the feedback loop, which is, if you sort of imagine, you know, a cycle. Number one, you come up with a plan. And this is how humans learn doing anything. I've got a plan, so I'm going to do this surgery. So you do your plan, you map it out, read up with whatever you need to do it, talk to someone else. Great. Number two, we execute and we roll it out. How did it go? So step number three in the cycle is we need to analyze. Did it work? Did it not work? How could we improve it? With the mindset of I'm after progression, not perfection. And then the last thing is learn from it. So if something didn't work, just learn and we go back and tweak our plan or tweak how we're going to do the surgery. So when they understand this feedback loop and you know that upon execution, we're telling you, you're going to stuff things up. That's okay. The last piece is, you know, do your best, but also play above the line of responsibility. So assume accountability. Something goes wrong. Don't blame your nurse. Don't blame other people around you. Just go, okay, I created it. It's not a bad thing. How do I tweak and evolve this? Because the best people have made the most amount of mistakes. That's why they're so good. They've been in the game long enough to know what didn't work. And every vet, we sat down once and called vets when vets go bad. And everyone had to share their worst vet story. It was unbelievably funny. Like just the things that went wrong. You just couldn't dream of it. So I think giving them that permission, it kind of allows them to go, it's okay. The vet surgeon's board, it's not if you go to the vet surgeon's board. It's when you go to the vet surgeon's board. It has nothing to do whether you're a bad vet. 9.5 times out of 10. Sure, there's a few kind of crazies out there that vet surgeon's board keeps a certain standard, but most of it's because you've got a client who's aggrieved because of a communication or expectation they had, and the next thing the person feels like they're being investigated and they're going to lose their license and all the rest, which is just couldn't be further from the truth. So if you just go, oh, every single good vet I know has had a vet surgeon's board complaint against them, and it has nothing to do with whether you're a good or bad vet. It's the public's kind of lever to be able to, you know, stop vets performing bad medicine. So, don't know, mate, they're the sort of things, not so much inspirational, but actually giving them something practical, and they go, oh, I feel a bit safer.
It's interesting because you're talking exactly along the lines that I've been thinking. I think it's about expectations. One of our previous guests said a while ago, he said, happiness equals expectations minus reality. And I think it's about just adjusting the balance between what are your expectations. As you say, very interesting you mentioned the making a mistake. Well, I'm so worried I'm going to make a mistake. Literally the last episode we released was with somebody who lectures students in America, a medicine specialist, and she was part of a research study into clinical errors in final year vet students. But I think it translates into the first 5 years of your career. And what do you think the percentage was of an anonymous survey of who has made a mistake, a clinical error in their final year as a vet student? What do you think the percentage is?
Oh, geez, I'd have to put it 100%. 100%. I can't think of anyone.
100%.
Yeah.
100% of them admit. And the sad thing is it's not 100% who admitted to it when they made the mistake. they anonymously said, yes, absolutely, on a survey. But in practice, they're like, well, fuck, I'm not going to tell anybody about it. So, A, absolutely, you are going to make a mistake. And the expectation I want to talk about is that expectation of that I'm going to be, quote unquote, a good vet. What does a good vet look like? A good vet is not a perfect vet because there's no such thing. Like what I'm learning chatting to vets on here is the best vets, exactly as you say, are the ones who have an attitude of, yeah, try stuff, do stuff, make mistakes, learn from it. There's no such thing as a perfect vet. And if your expectation is that you're going to walk out of vet school and be a really good vet, you're going to suck. Realistically, the stuff you're going to try, you're going to suck at it. And everybody else expects it except for you. So, yeah, I think I'm on the right track.
Oh, and I think it's important for them to be in an environment where I believe in a lot of times there's too much hand-holding. Like, it's like, we don't ever want anyone to get stressed, you know, when they're working in practice. And like, that's BS. Of course you're going to get stressed. If you want to be commercially minded, you need to learn how to tic-tac along. And the only way you learn it is by feeling that kind of stress and going, okay, I'm going to do it anyway. Then you get used to it and it becomes simpler and easier. So, you know, you see people and they're 2 years out and they're taking an hour and a half to do a dog spay. It's like, you actually want to be in an environment where you go, okay, you know what you're doing now, go. And you're left to your own devices with support if needed, but you don't have someone scrubbed in with you the whole time, you know? So I think I like people to not sink or swim, but I'm okay for them to kind of get down to just under, the water's just below nozzle level, so they can still breathe, but they're having to paddle pretty hard to stay above water. And what I find is it creates more confidence. And I think that's the one thing that we see lacking is people's confidence in having a swing at things. If you look at now, I was in a regional practice, so I got to do lots of orthopedic surgery within my first year. Whereas in here in a city practice here, that would just never happen. It's kind of sad because they miss that developing yourself where you go, I feel pretty good. I can fix a broken leg.
Yeah, it's such a fine balance. I think about this a lot because I agree if you're never under stress, let's call it tension. Stress has got negative consonant. If there's never a tension between I'm here and this is where I want to be, and between point A and B, there is a tension and I will feel it. How do you reach that tension without taking it too far? Because certainly from my own experience, there were times when it was too much in over my head and probably negatively affected my feelings towards my career and my confidence. Because again, you take it too far and that confidence takes a knock. You're like, oh, I'm terrible. I couldn't handle that. I'm just going to step back and not take on new things because that was such a stressful experience. It's tricky. And I don't think there's a perfect path. I think it is sometimes you're probably going to overstep into the one zone and then correct and bring it back to the other side. But finding that jump.
It's called eustress. So EU stress is a lack of stress. And it's been shown that that's actually really bad. It gives people a lack of feeling like they're living. If there's just no stress, there's no meaning. And then you've got hyperstress at the other end. So as you say, I think as practice owners, when you're, you know, helping new grads, it's like, okay, push them out and keep pushing that boat out, but just far enough that you can grab the boat if it's not looking too good. But I think it's okay for them to probably have a go at things before they think they're ready, because you never think you're ready, right? Because you don't have the confidence. You learn competence. You get confidence when you get competent. And the only way you do that is by pushing that boat out a little bit continuously. The other thing, you know, occasionally you'll see with new grads is they're very gung-ho and they can come out going, look out, and they can't be told anything because they're a new grad and they're a vet. And I've heard some pretty rock and roll stories of cases of those where they need, like, one thing I'd say is be coachable. Be coachable as a new grad, like, open up. Anyone can help you. Just be up, ask questions, be inquisitive, but be coachable to get feedback, because you'll leave a littered driveway if you're not coachable.
I'm picturing a metaphor of a trapeze artist. You got to leap sometime, right? If you stay on the one thing and just swing up and down, eventually it's going to stop swinging and you're just going to hang there. Nothing's going to happen. But it's scary to let go and grab that next one. So I think the secret is knowing that I can let go. I've got to have a go at it. It's freaking scary. It feels like I'm going to die, but there's got to be the net underneath me too. Well, if I miss my grab, I'm not going to die.
Maybe that's the thing that you could share with him, is that to feel like, oh, I'm outside of my, I'm nervous. Let them know that that's normal. That's okay. You're going to feel it. If they think I want to get in, feel completely confident, which is, I think, what they're looking. They're trying to feel confident before they get there. You're not going to get confident until you become competent. The only way you get competent is by stretching your own boundaries continuously. And in order to do that, we say be comfortable with being uncomfortable, because that's how your ability grows.
Okay, that helps. Thank you, Sam. All right, let's get back to the veterinary profession in 2023, where we are. So when we spoke last time, it was all about, we're all under the pump. There's too much business, not enough vets, not enough support staff. We're drowning. And it was almost like money's not actually an object. The money's coming in droves, and we just can't find the resources to spend it on to make things achievable. So we talked about strategies for dealing with that. And I feel like that's shifted from conversation I have on here and where I work and just chatting to people. It's not, I wouldn't say the pendulum has swung completely, but it's I don't feel like we're on that extreme anymore. What's your thought with your clients and you, I mean, you're involved in the vet profession? Where are we? What's happening? Before I let Sam answer that, just two quick bits of housekeeping. First thing, a listener suggested an episode idea that I think might be fun. A Q&A episode where you interview me. So if you've listened to me interrogating my guests and you've ever thought, well, I have a few questions for you, you smartass, or maybe you're curious about the process of making the podcast, or you just want to disagree with me, then send me your questions and I'll answer them right here on the podcast, which will be the edited version. But we will record it as a live event as well, so you can ask me your questions on the spot and hear the unfiltered answers before I've had time to think of smart answers that make me sound more intelligent. We'll let you know when that's happening, but in the meantime, please send me your questions at info@thevetvault.com or on Instagram or on the VetVault network if you're a member there. In fact, leave us a video message on the network. That'll be much more fun. Which leads me to the second bit of admin, our specialist support space on the VetVault network. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's a space on an app or the web version where you can ask clinical questions about tricky cases of our team of smart specialists. We have a bunch of people using it regularly already to help them deliver better patient care and save themselves hours of reading or Googling or asking questions on vet chat groups where really it's kind of the blind leading the blind. We recently added dermatology nerd Dr. Alex Moore to the list of people who you can ping for same day answers, usually within less than an hour during Australian work hours. She joins our medicine and emergency and critical care specialists. We've put a link to this space in the show description. Go and give it a try. Okay. Back to Sam and his thoughts on whether the pendulum is swinging away from too many clients, not enough vets.
Yeah, well, I agree, mate. I don't think the pendulum's gone the other way, but it's definitely moving in that direction. One of the things that there's been a dashboard developed that is unbelievable for running a vet practice. It just makes running a vet practice so easy because it takes the data from any software system and puts it into categories and figures that's very intuitive to understand what's going on in the business and then what should I do as a result of it. Obviously, when we're coaching businesses, every business we do, we actually pay for them to get the dashboard. It's not ours. Someone else's dashboard, a company called Your Pet PA does it. And so what's cool is I get to see, it's not opinion, I get to see direct data. And across, you know, at the moment, I think we're up to about, we've only really started putting them on in the last sort of few months, but it's about 60 odd dashboards that we'll take a look at. And I can see everything going on in every practice, including all the financials. Here's some interesting things. Where you said, oh, there's plenty of money coming in, what's actually happened is sometimes they call it the profitless boom. And what's happened is wages have gone up as a percentage generally across the board. And normally you look at wages should sit at about 38% without paying payroll tax, but 38% is your wage plus super. It's kind of the sweet spot where we go, yep, if you do that, you're probably going to be running your 20 to 30% net profit practice. They're kind of a basic parameter. That's including paying your business owner. So it's anyone that's generating revenue, you know, running the business, 38% should be your cost of your wages of your total turnover. So what's happening, we're seeing a lot of businesses running at high 40s, low 50s. And if you're a 48, 55, you can't cut profit. It's just too high. And it's kind of like everyone's going, well, what's happening? Why are we making all this more money coming in, but we're not more profitable? Why? Because your expenses have gone up significantly, and wages being the big one, which is obviously supply and demand. Now, on top of that, what we're seeing is since about March, April, invoice numbers starting to drop back a little bit. So we get to see how many invoices done per practice and how many invoices generated per vet. These are declining, not significantly. And let's be honest, when they go, oh, we're heading for a recession, well, vets are great. Great profession to be in, because it's pretty much, it's considered recession proof, which is why your Woolworths and things like that want to get in there, because people's discretionary spend, they'll stop going on the holiday, but they'll still take care of their pets. So it's a pretty safe industry. So I hear people going, it's doom and gloom in the vet space. And I think that's hyper charging the situation. I don't think that's the case. I think what we're seeing is as invoice numbers come down, the number of people going, I want another vet decreases. I was talking at the AVA business group, doing round tables and chatting to people there, and we're saying, how are you for vets? And most of them were going, no, we're good for vets. We're good for vets. What was interesting is we haven't got nurses, good nurses. So we're just seeing the pendulum come back in, I can't find a vet. That's kind of tending to come back. Now you're hearing stories of people going, oh my gosh, I had a vet just ring me up and see if I could get a job, which, you know, a year and a half ago was a unicorn story. So we're sort of seeing this swing change. Interesting statistic where retail is decreasing in practices. So because I can get all this data and have a look very specifically, on average, food as a percentage of revenue, as so, you know, how much food practices are selling, it's decreased from 2017 to now, it has decreased by 36%. Preventatives as a percentage, revenue has decreased by 31%, and pharma, you know, so drugs, is down by 8.5%, which means those three combined has decreased by 19%. So nearly one-fifth of your turnover that you used to sell in retail has gone. Now, if we look at the trending graphs, it's a downward trend. So we just go, well, you can arm wrestle this and have an opinion, but it's pointless because this is what the data. If you then correlate that with companies that actually measure e-commerce sites and they measure consumer behavior online, and you're asking things like, what percentage of things do you buy online now as opposed to 4 years ago? It's extraordinary. It's like almost doubled and tripled. It's tripled the amount of people that actually say, I actually buy everything online now. So there's this shift happening. So this will mean that in vet practices, you can expect to see a decrease in retail. So those practices that are propping up their fees by selling product and, you know, and hoping on bags of dog food and things like that, and it's a declining game. So these are sort of what we're actually seeing, the actual data saying, okay, this is what's happening. I have a saying that is not mine. It came from one of my original mentors. And he said, when everything starts going a bit pear-shaped, there's the economy, and that's what people are doing, consumer spending, and then there's your economy. And that's what goes on inside your head. So my economy is, and I've developed this in, you know, the last 15 years since first hearing it, is he said, what you want to learn is go is, how do I thrive regardless of the economic climate? What that means is there's changes. It's cyclical. It will happen. The pendulum comes back. But I can sit there and throw your hands in the air and go, oh, this is terrible. Or you go, cool. Where's the opportunity that no one else is seeing? And that's where you can do incredibly well in these periods, because when things start getting a bit darkish and a bit gloomy, everyone tends to get frozen. They become paralyzed with fear. And this is where the opportunities actually occur from. So there's very specific strategies that are using. So I'll give you one for an example, the whole looking at the retail side of things. If you look at the actual number of clients that buy their retail products from you, food is around about 3-4%. Preventatives is about 7%, which means 97% of your clients are getting their food elsewhere. So as a vet practice, you're getting nothing of that. No clip of the ticket, zero. But what's the thing that every person wants? The vet recommendation. So there's a company called Your Pet PA, and what they do is you can send emails to your clients, say, hey guys, I know that we can't get these flea treatments and food. We just can't compete with online. And everyone knows that. They'll buy one packet from you and then go to either a pet store and probably online. So if you actually, and people are feeling the pinch financially. So if you communicate with them and say, hey, I've found a way to drive your dollar further looking after your pet. And what it does is click here is a link, and it's a unique link to your practice. And if they buy anything from there, food or flea products or whatever it is, shampoos or whatever, they go and buy it. It's fulfilled by Your Pet PA, which is really their logistics company and education company. But then you get a 10% clip of the ticket. So what it means is, and then when they're next due for the next one, the company will automatically send an email from you. It's not from them, it's from you. So all correspondence is coming as though it's from you. Hey, you're now due for your next flea one. Click here, and it's free to be sent, and it's like super, super competitive prices. So it's overcome this problem of convenience for the client. They don't have to leave home. They're being reminded of it. Yes, it turns up because it has algorithms. If you have a certain size dog and you buy a certain bag of food or flea treatments or whatever, it kind of auto-calculates when it would be due. And what this means is you can actually develop a passive income from the retail side of your business without stocking the products.
I like that because and I've seen this even outside of my working day life, but that whole competition on price for products, it actually erodes trust, I find, in our profession. Because so you have it on the shelf because some people want to buy it from you. And so they might buy their flea product or whatever, their tick preventative from you at the minimum that you can charge, because really you have to have some sort of a markup, right? And we have, like, we can't buy in the bulk that some of these online pharmacies buy. And then they go online and they see, oh, it's like 30% cheaper online. And they go, oh yeah, my vet's screwing me. Fuck, he must be raking it in, that bastard. He's charging so much for all these products. And they don't understand the vet. So actually, I had, where I live, Sam, we've got an Airbnb. And the other day, my wife, who's a vet as well, she said, oh, by the way, people checking in today. So we dog friendly. She said, don't talk to them about vet stuff. Don't say you're a vet. She said, because in their correspondence before them not knowing that she's a vet, they said they're bringing their dog, and the whole background story of why they're coming is they're having a special holiday with their dog, which is really cool. We get a lot of those. People do that, right? They book weekends for their dog because he's been diagnosed with a heart condition. But then it surfaced in the conversation that they're really pissed off with their vet because they realized the difference in price that he charges for the heart meds versus what they can get online. So they're just angry with the profession. So Rose said, don't tell them you're a vet because they're pissed off at vets. I'm like, wow, that's huge. So does the same thing, that model you're talking about, does it hold true for prescriptions as well? Or is it just food and, you know, over-the-counter sort of stuff? Like, how do we deal with the pharmaceutical stuff without eroding?
Well, there's a pharmacy there as well. So instead of you having the product, you can go, great, you just email, send the script through to the PA and they can fulfill that. You know, I think for, you know, pharmaceutical stuff, your high turnover stuff, I would have it in store, you know, your antibiotics and this and that. But for your routine things that are ongoing, lifelong medication, you know for a fact that they're going to jump online. All the data tells they're going to jump online. And as you said, they then go, my vet is, you know, they're charging me heaps. So what we've found in this dashboard, we can look at every single product that's sold that you stock, and we can have a look at your margin. So not your markup. You know, if you've got 100% markup, that means you've got a 50% profit margin. What's amazing is this. Practices that are selling like your preventatives and things like that, if they've got a 20% margin, which means they're marking up 40%, if you actually add in the hard cost of someone's got to order it, stock it, write some off, etc. You allocate around about, we figured out it's around about $6 per item you need to add in as your cost of selling that product to someone else. When you add that in, a lot of the times people are actually losing money by selling these products. And it's an interesting thing from a business perspective because you've got a choice, right? You can go, all right, well, A, I'll either put a markup that is then competitive, that actually I make some money, Or if I want to be competitive online, I actually can't do it. I'm not a high volume business model. So it gives the opportunity then to say, hey guys, we can't compete, but we've found a better way. And hey, we trust this source. We know where it's coming from. It's not some dodgy website. But then you're actually getting a clip of the ticket, because otherwise, when that vet and they go online, they're gone. Like, imagine if you could get 50 to 60% of your clients buying their retail products online and you're getting a 10% clip of the ticket every time they do it. I mean, the amount of revenue and profit you can generate without doing anything, because you don't even need to do the marketing. It's all done for you through another company. And I reckon when I look at a changing environment, everyone's going, oh, it's getting quiet. I'm like, oh my gosh, clients are going to be short of money. You've got a dialogue here that, hey, you can actually help you save some money and still get the quality products. So they're winning. The client's winning. The vet practice is winning, because you actually now, you know, who's going to miss out? Well, it'll be the other online pet stores and pet stores, because it's all coming, channeling through, and you're getting the vet recommendation. So the vet practice wins. The client's definitely winning, because it's easier and more convenient and cheaper. And of course, you know, that's how Pet PA will win. So it's one of those nice little, you know, I think you find these little models, you go, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with it? And it's one of those nice little win-wins that we're kind of encouraging our clients to look at and use, because it's all the data says that's where it's going anyway.
That's a very nifty strategy. Does it still leave us with a shortfall? Because I wanted to unpack the stuff you talked about before, that first of all, the big increase in wages, which again, as a no longer a practice owner and an employed vet, I go, great, yeah. I mean, we talked about students before. One of the things that discouraged me greatly as a student was knowing about how shit the wages were. So I think it's a really good thing that that's come up, and hopefully, I don't know, you tell me, is it going to stay up? Or is it going to correct again? Because I have heard about these companies emailing out all their locums saying, guess what? Our locum rates are dropping. If you still want a locum for us, tough shit, it's coming down, which I don't know how that's going to go for them. Good luck finding locums, unless everybody does it. But our wage is going to stay high and everything else will have to readjust to reestablish that profit margin. Or at some point, is that supply demand going to say, well, I have vets calling me looking for jobs, so I'm going to drop my rates?
Yeah. Good question. And it's a crystal ball. No one has it. No one knows. But if you think about taking first principles, what are humans really good at doing? Adapting, right? That's what we do incredibly well. That's why we're the alpha species on the planet and we evolve. So all that happens, if you go, right, now wages are high, well, you know, there's going to be a period of like perturbation that's uncomfortable. So the vets, you know, practice of making no money. And then what's going to happen? Well, evolution will happen to allow it get to back to, you know, your viable business that's, you know, worthwhile having. So the things that I'm seeing that is going to actually change and offset that, number one is practices becoming more service orientated. So for example, we've done about 3,500 phone-based interviews with clients of vet practices a week after they've been into the practice and said, what do you actually want from a business? What is it that you most like about this business? And the data from it's fascinating. Do you know that 51% of people, if they gave a 10 out of 10 score, so they went to a vet practice and we said, what do you think? And they said it was a 10 out of 10. And we said, what is the thing that you most appreciate about this business? As in, we're trying to understand what's the driver, what's the appreciation driver that got you to give that score and tick in your mind, this is a good experience. Number one, they were friendly and easy to deal with. Number two, they're obliging and accommodating. Number three, they're caring and attentive. Number four, communication. We haven't even got to, oh, by the way, they seem to actually know what they're doing as vets. And so what's fascinating is moving forward, to me, businesses have to become more orientated on actually understanding what your clients really want. And most people guess. That's why we did all this research and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars doing it. So that advice we can give to clients is this is what people are actually looking for. What's your system delivery? So that's number one, is becoming more client, because what found is it increases what we call price elasticity, so that businesses that have a better service, people will go, I'm happy to pay for it. You know, I heard a business the other day, dog's going in, a friend of mine, $1,000 for a routine descale and polish with some x-rays, grade one. And I was like, wow. And so I started poking. He goes, oh, you know, he thought it was pretty good value. Whereas other practices would be going, my gosh, $1,000 just for an x-ray and grade one, descale and polish. Like, I looked at the dog's teeth, no teeth being pulled out or anything like that. So you may see a price adjustment, which I think will have to happen. You know, it's devaluing the dollar is going to happen. But the third thing I think is going to happen is One of the things that we're hearing from a lot of practice owners is there's an entitlement sort of thing that I don't want to work too hard now, so therefore I'm not going to do this many hours, or hey, it's 5 o'clock, I'm out of here. I know there's a client coming in, bad luck, I'm not doing it. And I think what will happen is this will go on for a period of time because of supply and demand until business owners just go, no, no longer. And what will happen is you'll get more leverage around vets that are delivering a better service and, you know, being more commercially minded. So this is where we talked about vet liaisons. You know, you'll have one vet and 2 to 3 vet liaisons or co-consults, whatever you want to call them, working, so that the vet almost becomes more a director of traffic as opposed to being the be-all and end-all. And that model, this is how you can actually make a vet. Basically, what you have to do is a vet has to generate more. You can't flog a vet harder because everyone's busted. It's looking at the model and saying, how could we generate, how do we do $1 million per vet? And when a business does $1 million per vet, the profitability just spits out of it and it's a different model. So they're the sort of things I think moving forward that we see. You know, you can keep putting price up, and that's every coach's number one trick, pull that lever. And I don't disagree with it in some cases, but I think in isolation, it's a dangerous thing to do because sooner or later people, and this is what we're starting to see, they're saying no to that dental now. I don't really need it. No, I won't, because now I'm starting to watch my money a bit more. A couple of years ago, this kind of place was awash with money. Who cared? So I think you're going to start looking at these and going, how do I do that? The other model that I believe is going to become way more important moving forward is pet insurance and wellness plans. I haven't talked about pet insurance for the last probably 5-6 years. We used to be one of the biggest sellers of pet insurance per head capita or per vet in our practice because we identified that we need to charge X and most of our clients were pensioners. So how are we going to make this work for them? So I think that's the other piece of the puzzle, is that pet insurance is going to become more normal and wellness plans sort of is really a payment plan to help people do the basics. So they're the things that I think are going to help businesses get that wage bill back down to your 38% so they're running profitably again. And vets being still paid, which I agree with. I think vets should be paid more. I really do. And I think that's the change and the tweak that we'll see happen.
That's interesting. So instead of, and I'm trying to think of the repercussions for this, but instead of saying, well, just put up the prices, because I agree there's a, sometimes I think perceived ceiling, but there's a point where the clients go, well, that's too much. Whether they're angry about it or not, they go, I can't afford that. So instead of just doing that, you go, well, we've got to reduce our spend, our outgoings. And part of that is reduce our wages, because that's our biggest spend. But we can't or don't want to really drop vet wages or staff wages in general. So we have to find ways to make the staff that we have more productive, as you say, without flogging them. So it's systems, really, better systems to go leverage what I've got without. So instead of saying, well, let me get another vet and pay both of them X, and then I've suddenly left with 2X wages, go, well, let me increase my current vet to 1.3X, but 2X their output with being clever with systems.
The thing is, the mechanics, the financial mechanics don't work. I'll just put another, if I'm running at 5% profit, I'm really busy now, I'll put another vet on. Your mechanics just don't work financially. So you have to think about, a vet's the most expensive part of the system, right? So they're so valuable. They're also the kink in the hose pipe. How do we make them more effective, more efficient, more productive? And it's like things like, they shouldn't be having to write their notes. So there's AI coming along that basically it's not even voice to text, it's voice, and it picks up the things that are actually relevant and puts it into a formula so that your clinical notes are written. So you can do it that way, or you can have someone in there typing up your notes for you. Vets certainly shouldn't be talking to people about money. That's sort of someone who, like a vet liaison or a co-consult, can do that. So when you look at these things, the solutions are really, really obvious, and they're actually not that difficult. The challenge is people getting their head around, oh, okay, I'm prepared to, like a new grad, push the boat out, actually get comfortable with trying something new and being uncomfortable. And the businesses we see do it, we just look at their profitability and they're cranking along just fine. But I do think there's going to be more leverage of better vets is the way to do it. Because let's face it, we'll have A, B, C, D and everything. And, you know, would you rather have an A grade or a D grade player on your team? Well, if you want to play A grade, you're going to need A grade players. And what it'll allow you to do with a different system, it'll allow you to pay them accordingly without burning them out. So they actually go, hey, they're getting what they need, fulfillment, and I'm getting better paid. And those vets that aren't prepared to say they want to play D grade, well, that's okay. But I think we'll see that market shift a bit. I really do.
Which takes us back to advice for new grads, for vets coming into the profession, because I felt that as well. I actually spoke to an old mentee of mine who was asking me about shifting jobs. And exactly because of this, I said to her, be proactive and go out and have an offering. Make sure you have a good offering for your new boss, because I think the days of vets saying, I'm a vet, I have a vet degree, you're going to pay me this and I'm going to work this much and I won't do this and I will do this, those days are going to be over. You could negotiate that your wages are going to be better, which is fantastic, but you're going to have to earn it. You're going to have to be the vet that they need, not just show up with a vet degree.
Let's look at it from this angle. Imagine you own a business. Well, you've owned a business, so you know what it's like. I'm coming along, I'm a vet, going to work, and I'm going, hey, listen, Hubert, what about if I can increase your turnover by X, Y, Z, or increase your profitability? If I do that and I take that initiative, can I have a slice of the pie? Now, as a business owner, you've got nothing to lose. You're like, of course, this would be brilliant.
That's literally what I did. That's how my business ran. That I went to the owner of the business where I was and said, I have this plan, but I want a slice of the pie. And that's suddenly my career changed, because that's, and I've been saying that for ages. Don't go there hat in hand saying, I want more. Here I am. Go there and say, I want more. Here's how we're going to do it. What do you think? Let's work together on this.
I had someone from New Zealand call me up a couple of days ago and they said, I'm just noticing with the sort of a younger generation, they sort of come out and it's as though, oh no, it's 5 o'clock, I'm out of here. And I know we've all, you know, I don't disagree with that, but I think that we've come from like, it's like, you know, your crap salary and you work your guts out and, you know, which we're just dumber. Yeah. We so I think that's smarter than us. But I think they have to look from, think as a business owner and think, how do I get what I want as the employee? How can I give the business what it needs? And I think if they're thinking in a two-way street, I think that's a really healthy thing. So I just believe that an entitlement sort of sense of you, which gets used and thrown around a bit flippantly, I think, because it's just different, it's different perspectives of what they think the working life should be like. But it's a commercial reality that you have to produce X, Y, Z to be paid X. That's just the financial mechanics. So I think if they can be thinking about how could, I imagine them coming going, I'm going to be the one that's responsible for developing the whole vet liaison model in the practice, as opposed to being the vet going, no one's writing my notes. You know, it's just, it's chalk and cheese. And you're looking to say, well, it's not about what I want. It's about what does the business need? And if I will then deliver that, my value as an employee goes up significantly. So I'd be encouraging you to start thinking from a business point of view rather than an employee or a technical point of view.
It's a big ask though, because we're certainly not trained for that. Most of us, and I will put my hand up as being like that, we like the clinical stuff. I want to be a fantastic clinical vet. I want to know what I'm doing. I want to do better surgeries. I want to have all the medical knowledge. I mean, I sell medical knowledge for a living. And to some degree, I want to go, well, the business stuff is your problem. There's a reason I don't run a vet practice, because it's hard work and it's complicated. I want you to pay my wage and I want to do really good clinical work. And beyond that, it's your problem. I get that. I feel that, but I know it's not practical. You have to, I don't know. How do you get better at it? Let's say I'm a young vet or even an older vet. And I go, well, yeah, I got to get better at this stuff. How do you do it?
This is where I talked about, be curious, be open-minded, be coachable. So I'll give you an example. When I opened my practice, I went to the most successful practices that weren't in my direct competitive area. And I said, can I buy you lunch? Can you tell me what I need to do to run a successful practice? And they just sat down and told me. So if you go and find some successful practices and you know they're doing well, and go and ask the business owner, hey, can you tell me how to, give me some points on how you can do things more efficiently, more effectively, better service, all those things, you'll generally find successful people love to tell someone else how they can do it.
I know. So it's never hard to get guests for the podcast, Sam.
So I just think, I heard a friend of mine the other day, he said, we've got this amazing vet, we're paying her a bucket load. But she came in and said, I'll generate X amount, this is what I want to be paid. And he went, well, if you generate X amount, I'll be happy to pay it. And he said, I'm paying her well and truly above, well and truly top dollar. But he goes, it's worth it every cent of the day. She's loading stuff and booking stuff in and just sending it out the back. So all she's doing is she's being a really good technical vet. So treat what's in front of you. Gus Braniff from Eltham Vet Practice once told me that. I love that line. Just treat what's in front of you and you're an incredible vet. Most people are going, oh, no, we're too busy. We've got three procedures booked in. We couldn't possibly. You know, she's sending stuff out the back like as a vending machine, just loading the system. So I don't think they need to know how to run a business, but I think if they think in a commercial viewpoint, and it's that balance between technical and commercial, and I think that's a really, as a new grad, I think if you develop that, you can become way more valuable in the marketplace.
Completely random question, and you might not know at all. I don't know. Are you involved purely in Australia and New Zealand? Do you have a finger on the pulse elsewhere as well? And I'll tell you why I'm asking. I've just come back from spending a bit of time in the US, went to IVEX, to the vet conference there, and chatted to amazing people and business owners, and also traveled the country a little bit and looked around. And of course, I'm a vet, so I look at, I see people with animals. You know, I you can't help but notice it. And I do feel like it's, like some of the stuff we're discussing here, like the economic downturn and the decreased spending and things like that, doesn't seem that relevant, specifically in the US. I don't know what's happening in the UK. I chatted to business owners who say, nope, as busy as ever, same problem, same challenges, too many clients, not enough staff, vets and tech. Do you know what's happening? If you don't, then that's fine. But I'm just curious to know what the patterns are between the different continents for our international listeners.
Not in current market as such, no, I couldn't comment on that. What the thing I always observe is, what I do observe, like vet seems to be a very small industry the world over, because pretty much when there's one problem in a country, it's the same problem in all the countries. And what I look at, I sort of look at in terms of process and systems, going, well, if it works here, does it work there? And so I've tested a few things in different countries and the result's the same. So it just made it be, as you say, a less economic sort of hit because those interest rates, they're not feeling that pinch as much.
Yet. All right. Is there anything else we're missing out on? Anything that you're excited about at the moment or sharing to your clients or anything else we want to talk about?
Yeah. I think the main thing is, like, stop listening to everybody and watching the news, because it is not going to help your business. What the economy does, and you've got, sorry to say it, not a lot of say on it. Your economy, you do. So in our practice, I'll give people a little tip. In 2008, you know, the whole GFC, global financial crisis, you were forbidden in our practice to talk around things being bad. We just went, no, there's our economy is we do great no matter what. And so we weren't going, oh, God, things are bad. Because when you start talking about that, it has that kind of compressive, withdrawing sort of weight on you. And A, it's not good for your mindset. B, it certainly will stop you, how you recommend things and that. So we actually forbid talking about times being tough. And as a result, we just didn't really notice them. And if you think about it, I heard someone talking about the senior members of society who have, you know, they've kind of tapped out and they've got, as interest rates go up, if they don't have a mortgage, how stoked are they? They're making more money. And so there's this, just this balance. It only affects those people who are paying rent and have a mortgage, which I know is a chunk of people. But I'd go, oh, seniors, okay. How can I think differently to go, well, they're actually doing better? I'm not saying instead of a senior's discount, you give a senior's
20% a senior extra levy. Charge. Yeah. We can't call it a senior levy. Call it the boomer levy.
Boomer tax. I just think if you just say, how do I thrive in this environment? And, you know, they always say, if you want a better result, ask a better question. Rather than going, oh, who are you down? Are you down? It'll change. It'll be cyclically. I'd go, how can you run your business leaner, more efficiently, more effectively, and protect your team? And there's just ways of doing that. Some of the little things we've talked about, you know, do you have a vet liaison in there talking to every single client around pet insurance or wellness plans? You do that for 2 years and you suddenly got 30% of your clients insured. It's a very, very different ballgame. Your whole psychology shifts in your business, because then you just charge what you need to charge. You don't do what you need to do.
And you're right, that mindset does inevitably flow through subconsciously. So again, me as a mortgage payer, I wonder, I'm pretty sure it affects me at work. I assume that the person I'm speaking to here, maybe it increases my empathy towards people's finances. And I go, well, I'm feeling the pinch. I'm sure you are too. So maybe I should preemptively start thinking about your money situation. So I like that to say as well, but you leave it at the door, basically.
Yeah. That's your economy is... you do well no matter what. Whether they say yes or no, you've got no control over that. But you know, they talk about in a discussion, the most certain person always is the influencer. So the one who's most like, we should do this, we need to do this, they're going to influence the other person. You just watch two people talking. Whoever's more certain and confident, they become the influencer.
Be the influencer. Like it. All right, Sam, let's wrap up. If you're ready to wrap up, if not, let me know. But otherwise, I have the new question that I've instituted about 6 months ago, which I really like, where I have a previous guest ask a question for my current guest, and then you have to give me a question for my next guest. So the question I had from the last interview I did was an interesting one, and I don't know the answer for you. The person I interviewed was an Instagram or social media veterinary personality with massive audience and has a lot of impact through it, actually. Really, really positive stuff. And they wanted to know, my current guest, do they have a social media account? Yes or no? And then do you think it is important for vets to have one?
So I don't. I have an interesting view on this. I put off using social media as a primary marketing tool for a long time because I just didn't understand and I had my head shoved in the sand and I wish I had it. So then one day we just went, we just need to be everywhere online. And that means the Facebook thing, the Instagram thing, the whatever thing. But here's what I refuse to do. I simply refuse to become one of these screen 2 inches from your face, 24/7 person, checking this, making comments and doing that. It might be a good way to build a brand, but for me, I go, I'm losing all leverage because suddenly I'm thinking, what do I need to comment? I've got to get back that person and comment. So my approach was, should you have it? Hell yes. In a business, find someone who can manage that thing well for you. And we have a team that does that. And we do a lot of social media marketing. In terms of a personal presence, I have zero. I have a Facebook account. I really barely know how to use Facebook. Shock, horror. Like, well, I use it for our mastermind group because obviously we're in communication with them all the time. But that's it. I don't ever, ever check. Everyone's like, you got 67 friend requests. I'm like, well, I don't have 67 friends. And then half of them are people I've never even heard of. I'm like, why would I? Yeah, yes. So it's just a personal thing that I've watched people build brands and they just spend so much time immersed in their phone. And I just chose not to do it. I think you could, obviously you can build an incredible brand and do it that way. It's just not my choice to build. That's not how I'd want to build a brand. I want to build a brand that is a bit more leveraged so I can have a life outside of it and, you know, go on holidays and.
I get it. So do you think that it is potentially valuable as a veterinarian for a vet to have?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's interesting is I've seen, you see individual vets, and if they develop a following online, you know, they become very valuable because what happens? Well, they go from one job to another and guess what? One comment and voomp. So, you know, as you know, when we're coaching business owners, we're like, you don't want to develop the identity that people are coming to see the vet. They're coming to see your business, which is why we like the whole vet liaison model. They're coming, this whole support team. It's not based around an individual's personality, because if that individual knows what they're doing on social media, and I have literally watched 30% of a database leave a practice when one vet left and they put two comments online. That was it. Over 6 months, they lost 30% of their database. So it's a real thing. And so I think it depends on what position you're sitting in. Like if I was employed, I would probably be developing a following because it also means I can come to the table and go, hey, I'm bringing business to the table. This is what it's worth. So it depends on where you're sitting in the whole scheme of things. Facebook itself for your business, I think there's two things. There's one, having a Facebook there, yeah, I think it's important. What you put on it is actually important. So you want to actually have a strategy around that. And that's just where myself personally, I'd go, I don't want to spend my life thinking about that because it's a strategy, but are there better strategies? I think a lot of people get so stuck on social media and the rest of their business is a bin fire. So I'm like, well, let's sort out all the other elements because internal marketing, you know, it's 16 times easier to get a current client to come back to you as opposed to a new client. So I just think that the client experience and the social media should really fit in with that, developing a certain brand. I'm a big fan of using videos. So, you know, if I was doing it as a business owner, I'd get used to, you know, twice a month or maybe once a week or something, shooting a little video. Hey guys, just saying, you know, letting you know what's going on. So then they're feeling connected to you as the business owner. Takes 2 seconds, takes you a little bit to get used to it. People feel very confronting putting a video up. Unbelievably powerful though, and very simple strategy. That how long does it take to shoot a video? 5 minutes. or 2 minutes. Got this new product. This is what it does. This is who it's for. Give us a shout out if you want one. It's just creating that community.
It's interesting your comments about your attitude towards social media, but going, yeah, I don't want to get sucked into that. And I forget where I read this. I feel like it's Indistractable, the book Indistractable. It's one of those books on productivity, a very popular book, where the premise behind the book is eliminate everything. Focus on the important thing and eliminate everything else quite ruthlessly. And they do talk about social media. And the counter argument is, I need social media for work, whatever. For me, you and me, I feel like I have to be on there as a marketing strategy, or it could be for your personal brand or other reasons. There's very valid reasons to be on it, connecting with people that I haven't seen in a while, all those sort of things. But he says, be very, very clear on what benefit are you getting versus the cost. And the cost being your time and attention and emotional energy. And make sure that that benefit outweighs that cost, because the cost is not insignificant. It doesn't cost you any dollars unless you're paying for social media marketing. But understand that, like, there's somebody else who, I think it's Seth Godin, who always talks about social media. He says, understand with social media, you are not the customer, you are the product. And considering that, and I often think about it, I often go, should I stop doing it? Because there is a cost to it. It's a drain on attention.
I think the other thing that I've always felt with a business is, how do you make a business that it's not about you, it's about the product, which is the practice, not you, the business owner identity. So you're kind of drawing a bit of fine line there, because when you go and sell a practice, if you're the identity and you're gone and you're very public, you know, it's kind of like if Tony Robbins said, right, I'm going to sell my business to someone else. He can't. Who's going to buy it? It's Tony Robbins. Everyone goes, it's not Tony Robbins, and I'm not doing it, because it's such a strong brand. So I think having clarity around what are you trying to do. Like, in, for me, my thing has always been, how do I get the outcome without doing the work? So I want social media, but I don't do the social media work. And number two, how do I have it that it's about a system of process? It's not about, hey, here's Sam and you need to speak to Sam. Because I think it's a... Yes, I'm a face of the business, but I also think it's a more difficult business to sell. So it's more profitable to own, but it's more difficult to sell. And of course, you make your big bucks when you sell something.
Yep. All righto. So your question for my next guest, not knowing who my next guest is.
And I've written it down. What do you consider the most important human trait to ensure success in business?
Good. I can't help but hear these questions and try and think of an answer myself, but that's not the game. So I'll leave it at that.
I'll be interested to hear what they say.
Yeah, me too. I love these questions. I can't wait for the next interview so I get to ask it. Sam.
it's kind of like, more. I know.
Sam, that was epic. Again, that was really good. I love the insights. I love these distance views of the profession that we're so immersed in. People like you who are in the profession, but also has a nice, almost an outsider view that gives different perspectives. So thank you so much for coming on again and sharing it with us. And hopefully it's helpful to somebody out there.
Good on you for doing what you do, Hubert. I think it's fantastic, mate. It really is. You hear people, you know, get inspired from listening to things that you do. And I think it's an incredibly valuable tool. And because I think sometimes it's pretty lonely out there, particularly in business owner world. So I guess I'm talking more about the sort of business stream of things. And I think sometimes it's nice for other people to go, oh, it's not just me, it's other business owners. So good on you, mate. I keep doing it. You're doing an awesome job.
Thank you so much, Sam. Before you disappear, I wanted to tell you about our new weekly newsletter. I speak to so many interesting people and learn so many new things while making the podcast. So I thought I'd create a little summary each week of the stuff that stood out for me. We call it the Vet Vault 321, and it consists of, firstly, 3 clinical pearls. These are 3 things that I've taken away from the clinical podcast episodes. My light bulb moments, the penny dropping, any new facts, and the stuff that we need to know to make all the other pieces fit. Then, 2 other things. These could be quotes, links, movies, books, a podcast highlight, anything that I've come across outside of clinical vetting that I think you might find interesting. And then 1 thing to think about. I'll share something that I'm pondering, usually based on something that I've read or heard, but sometimes it'll be just my own musings or rants. The goal of this format is that you can spend just 2 to 3 minutes on the clinical stuff and move right along if that's all that you're after. But if you're looking for content that is more nourishing than cat videos or doom scrolling, then our 2 other things should send you in the right direction. And then something extra for when you feel like a slightly longer read. If you'd like to get these in your inbox each week, then subscribe by following the newsletter link in the show description wherever you're listening to this. It's free, I think it's useful, it's fun, and it's easy to unsubscribe if it's not for you. Okay, we'll see you next time.